Please rise. Spokesperson Goodrich, will you lead us in the salute to our flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson,
present.
Councilmember Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Mutchler.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here.
All present accounted for. Thank you, Council. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the period where anyone from the United can speak to the Council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda, anything you'd like to address the Council. We like to limit you to 3 minutes, and we'll have the timer try to help you through that. So I don't know if we did the sign-up sheet, so we'll just do hands up. Or you do have a sign-up sheet.
No, we don't. That's
okay. Well, we'll do hands up. You were first. You won. Well, that's fine. We're casual. Welcome,
sir. All right. Mr. Mayor and members of the council, my name is Hal Roper, and I'm with the City of Birch Bay Group. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and we want to offer you a first look at a report that we've prepared and hope to distribute and disseminate to other groups in the Ferndale community. This is the report, and the title of it is Facts for Ferndale. It's the proposed Gateway Pacific Terminal. This entire document is based on the official permit application. Now, I'm sure that many of you have seen this in the local papers. This is what SSA is selling. And we ask the question, is what they are selling what we're actually going to get? We think not. I'd like to mention just one example of what we find somewhat misleading in this and other things that are surrounding the proposed Gateway Terminal. This document touts the terminal as being a multi-use bulk commodities terminal that will service and ship wheat, grain, coal, and wood chips. However, in reality, if you look at the official permit application, you'll see that for the first 10 years of operation, the terminal plans to ship nothing but coal. The coal piles, if they were extended, would be a total of 2.5 miles long, 6 stories high. That's 60 feet. If you were to start driving at the Hagen store on Main Street here in Ferndale, head out through Main Street, when you got to the Crossroads Community Church near Olson Road, you would have traveled 2.5 miles. These coal piles will be uncovered. They're exposed to wind and rain. They'll be twice the size of what's now at the West Shore Terminal. And it's estimated that these coal piles could admit up to 3 million pounds of coal per year into the atmosphere. Now, we got to this dance late. Well after SSA had a chance to lobby the local groups, and several councils have passed resolutions supporting what they thought was a multi-use terminal. Given the information in this document, we would ask you to perhaps revisit that decision and reconsider what you've done. And if I could coin a term, maybe you can unresolve your resolution. In any event, we want you to know that we stand ready to help put factual, accurate, and fair information out to the communities. And we hope that by doing that, and by publishing this, and putting it out to you, and you'll each get an individual copy, you'll agree with us that The task at hand is very important to all of us. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council, for your time. At this time, if it's permissible, if the members of the Council would be willing to receive a copy of this document, which we've prepared for them, we'll distribute that at this time.
You can just hand it to the clerk. Then.
I'm sorry?
You can just hand it to the clerk. Then.
All right, we can pass it out.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Of the speaker, or so is that speaker back? Sir, could you approach the podium? We have a question for you.
Was it Mr. Roper?
Yes,
Mr. Roper. Well, thank you very much for coming out here. And again, as you pointed out, we were one of the first in the county to propose a resolution of support. Now, is there anyone in your group that is actually paid by a corporation to be here tonight?
We are non-political. We're non-affiliated. We're a group of citizens who live in Birch Bay who became alarmed when we found out the extent and the scope and the scale of this proposed terminal. And rather independently at first, we started having resolutions about this, and I guess through fate, we started talking to one another, and we came together as a very unofficial group. I might add that the document that we've produced here is a result of many, many hours of research by the members of the group that was not funded in any way. So we're non-affiliated, non-political. We're concerned citizens, just like all the people in the group here are. We're trying to play catch-up.
Right, right. Now, are you associated with Christine Westland? Is it she part of your group?
I happen to know that woman because I'm married to her.
There you go. There you go. Well, I wanted to thank her if she was part of the group for some very informative information. Hopefully, all the other council members got it. But it was a letter that came in the mail to my post office box. So sometimes that, but it was very informative, and I look forward to your side of the story. Again, we try to make these decisions that's going to be the best in the community of all the communities up here, and so we've been a little slow to react to actually some.
Well, thank you for your time and consideration. We'd be more than happy to come back at any time that you extend an invitation to
thank us. You for your activism.
Thank you.
Okay, on the open comment period, so this is again a time where anyone can address the council anything that's not on the agenda. I know we had a sign-up sheet, but we'll just go to hands up so I don't have to walk over the next. So, next. Sir, you may come forward. Welcome.
Good evening, Council. Eric Kelton, 263 La Caron Drive. I'm also a member of the Ferndale Public Market. I'm a board member. And I'd just like to let the council know that we had a very berry ice cream social this weekend down at the public market. We were giving away free ice cream and berries to anybody who wanted it. We asked for donations for the food bank, and we raised $300.75 for the Ferndale Food Bank. All the ice cream was purchased at Edeline Dairies and Barbie's Berries. So I just want to let the council know, and thank you.
Thank you.
Would have been more impressive for us tonight.
City clerk also put stuff on the Facebook page and Twitter, so we got a lot of people came after seeing it on Twitter. So thank you,
Mark. I'd like to see you do that every week all summer.
Yeah.
Twice.
How many helpings did Councilman?
Two scoop hands.
Don't answer that question.
I abstained from comment on that.
Okay. Doug, do you want to go next?
Sure.
Okay. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. My name is Doug Bascom, and I'm honored to be part of the Ferndale Arts Commission. This dedicated group of artists and art lovers endeavors to live out its mission by providing leadership for the cultural enrichment of our community. I can tell you of commission-sponsored fundraising events for high school senior projects. I can describe garden parties that provide art and music for the elderly at Louisa House here in Ferndale. I can tell you of the hours devoted to helping emerging artists, from students to adults, in venues such as Art in the Park, to share their art. But my fellow commissioners have done a much better job of this in the past than I. This evening, I would, rather than speaking of the accomplishments and the vision for the future of Art in Ferndale, I would like to pose a question that both challenges and haunts me of the importance and the difference that art makes in life. Before I pose this question, though, I would like to challenge you. Challenge you to what art is. When hearing the word art, you may think of an old painting in a dusty museum or the playful finger painting of your child or grandchild that decorates the fridge. But I submit to you that art is so much more. Have you been awed by the depth and power of an orchestra, the flying fingers of Scott Joplin's ragtime piano, impressed by the finesse of a ballet dancer, or the quality of chalk art that you see in downtown Bellingham? Amazed by the detail and rendering of light in a painting, perhaps the music of Yo-Yo Ma, or perhaps awed by the creativity expressed by someone you know. So here's my question. It's simple, and yet it haunts me to this day. And the question is, what if? What if the music that you hear on the radio, the music that instantly transports you back to another time, never happened? What if that person years ago had listened to his critics that told him that he had no talent? What if this man had given up and not created the 900 paintings and 1,100 drawings during his short 37 years, of which only one sold in his lifetime? This is the man that said, "I dream of a painting, and then I paint my dream." This is the same man whose self-portrait was sold after his life for $71 million. What if Vincent Van Gogh had given up? What if Romeo hadn't yearned for Juliet, John and Paul had found their hard days simply too hard, Picasso didn't paint, Da Vinci's Mona Lisa never smiled, Monet's gardens never bloomed, Marcel Marceau didn't mine, Copland didn't conduct, and therefore, Aaron's Appalachian Spring never came to life? What if Norman Rockwell didn't create the America that many wish it could be? What if Seurat didn't dot, Dali didn't droop, the Gaz ballerinas didn't bow, Munch didn't scream? What if Warhol kept his tomato soup can hidden and covered, and Bach, when he began to go blind, had stopped? What if? What if? What if? I chose to be part of the Ferndale Arts Commission because I believe that art matters, that art makes a significant difference in the quality of life, and that this quality counts. Art mirrors life in all its celebrations, depth, drama, questions, and struggles. The Ferndale Arts Commission is all about creating venues and opportunities to encourage our local emerging artists to speak deeply of life. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next up, anyone back here? Welcome. That's a big arm load.
I won't take too many minutes.
So hopefully you won't read all that.
No. My name is Joy Gilfillan. I'm from Bellingham, Washington, 1225 East Sunset Drive. I am here for actually a couple of different reasons. The first one has to do with the fact that I invited you all to attend, and one of you actually made it, Lloyd Zimmerman. I appreciate that you did it. You passed this around. These are notes, the handouts that we gave at the Vibrant Futures Conference on July 2nd at Whatcom Community College. We will have another one on October 2nd. In the meantime, we've got three working groups that will be developing alternative economic strategies for Whatcom County that will enhance our quality of life, free people up rather than put them in jail, support our local economy, our local farmers, our local agribusiness, and that actually will support internal development in each one of your cities. What was discovered from the conference, if you look at the first page of this handout, there's actually three primary economic strategies that we intend as individual people of Whatcom County to bring forward to the county council and all of the city councils, and we intend a full-out interview process this summer to work with various city council, mayors, planners, people in the community to gather insights about what would you really love to have in your community. It is our conclusion from the first conference that media has not been actually creating, or media and education have actually not inadequately informed the public of various issues, and so correct information to the public is absolutely essential. We are coming up to three of the biggest issues that could absolutely destroy the economy of Whatcom County, not build it. The coal issue, the jail issue, and waterfront development are all three issues that actually could put a blight on the economic development of this county. You guys are sitting hot, right smack dab in the middle of 8 million people who could actually be coming to Whatcom County to really line your coffers with ecotourism, ecoculturalism, ecotransportation, eco-education, tremendous stuff, and we're intending to develop alternative economic strategies. Very quickly, I can't see my time, but as crazy as this seems, this is the first rough draft of how do we actually develop an alternative economy that would work in Whatcom County, that could actually develop a long-term strategy that could actually be implemented across this nation to recover the freedom, vitality, and wellness of our small businesses, our children, and our farmers, and our agricultural stability of this county. This is the step one. I actually have a research company that's volunteering some time with us. I've got some pretty amazing people who have stepped forward in the last few weeks to truly help us. Second issue, and I'll just take 1 minute. This is some of the research, and this is just some of the research that the Reentry Coalition has been doing to look at the real costs of the prison industry, the growth of the prison industry, the fact that the jail industry is behind a lot of the information that circulated on why we should be promoting a great big jail, and we have alternatives to bring to the table. If, in fact, you pass a resolution tonight asking for agreeing to provide $10,000 or whatever it is for a fiscal impact statement, I am asking humbly for someone from our local community who actually cares about the people who are going into the prison system and into the jail system at the grassroots level, sit on whatever that board and whatever that group is. I will be asking to come back to your council to do a full presentation on what we're recommending, what we'd like to see, and to ask for your support in developing alternatives to a great big jail. You stick a prison-like facility, they call it the Whatcom County Jail, you stick it right in the center of your freeway, and it will destroy your tourism industry. I'm asking humbly to, if you pass given money, ask that someone who's caring about your tourism and an alternative economic thing sit on the oversight of that. We've been denied at every other level in this county. Thank you.
I think we should clarify.
For the audience, and thank you. That is an agenda item. The city's not giving money. We're charging money.
You're what?
We're charging the county for that. So we're not. They're giving the money. They're giving the money to us to do a study. But we'll do that. That's the agenda item. So we'll show you the detail when that comes up. So anyone more on the open comment period, sir?
Thank you. My name is Robert Hakim. I live at 2803 Douglas Road, apartment 305. And I was looking through the paper, and I seen the story about the Ferndale BMX park. And it reminded me of a bitter tale about my son who was on the skate park with the skate park people that were trying to get it in. And he was very disappointed, and I had to just tell him that the city is works for the people, not vice versa. And then I see this story that Drury Burnett says that the city knows that teenagers and young people don't have a lot of recreational options in Ferndale. And it brings to mind that, again, the city is for the people, and why aren't we doing something? It's just a vacant field now. I see loaders and excavators sitting around where we could get some stuff and build a hill for these kids to get them off the streets. And I remember talking with the chief of police where he mentioned, well, we'll just build a bigger jail to handle the kids. And I'm going, okay, that's kind of makes sense, but from whose point of view? But I think the kids need something, and you take a ride with me, I can show you probably 20 kids standing around. So just my concern, and I don't know, we should help out the children and the people of the city instead of vice versa. putting us instead of them. I mean, that's what politicians do, I believe. But anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
I thought you were trying for a minute.
Last but never least. Welcome, sir.
Well, I'm still John Robinson this time, and my AKA Papa John, but there are no free pizzas. I still live at Malloy House, which is still an adult home with a U, not with an O. Don't prefer to be adult. I do walk every day, 7 days a week, and so I'm here representing myself, even though I did ask the chief for a streetwalker's permit. He's not given me one yet. Apparently it's in the mail. But I do want to represent others who walk the streets too, not necessarily streetwalkers, but I'm here to once again come. I wish I could bring accolades and plaudits to you this week, but I cannot. Progress would indicate a plus, a regress would indicate a negative, so I'm just here just to talk about the grass. Because at this point I've seen no progress whatsoever on the issue that I brought to you, and I'll remind you that as a citizen I am allergic to rigor mortis. And I don't think it looks good when you get tire prints on your forehead, particularly if you had studded tires. Excuse me. The point here being that I like every opportunity to be able to walk down the sidewalks in Ferndale, particularly on Main Street, to avoid being hit. And I will bring call to your attention again, and I do intend to keep going back, incidentally. I'm going to be very persistent. I'll be here every 2 weeks until infinitum, until I'm in a casket, and I'll still be waving my hand, telling you about the fire prints on my forehead, if that's what the case is. There are no crosswalk indicators at all. Now, I need to pause for a minute and tell you, speaking to this gentleman, talked about an artist. I am an artist, and every now and then I draw blanks. So if I draw a blank, that's because I'm practicing my artistry without pencil or paper. But at this point, the Main Street, and this is where I'm drawing a blank, the park,
Hovander.
Hovander Road. Thank you. Yeah. Main Street in Hovander is one of the most dangerous, if not the most dangerous, place to cross in this community, other than perhaps Washington would be a close second, Washington and Vista, and down near Higgins. The point is, I see absolutely no reason why we can't have signs indicating pedestrian crosswalk up ahead as traffic comes from the east and from the west and from Hovander. I would appreciate it if there not be skull and crossbone signs, however. Just regular signs indicating that there are pedestrians going across the crosswalk. I also point out that down on, and here again I'm drawing a blank, the Shell Station, what's that? LeBounty, thank you. At LeBounty, the east side there of the parking lot there for Hagen's, there is a crosswalk that goes across that parking lot. There is not one that goes across to the sidewalk. And I saw a young man, as I happen to know, does have some severe mental issues, just yesterday I think it was, in that island in between the two sides that goes across that Hagen there, waiting to cross to the bus stop. There was two vehicles coming, one in the left lane stopped for him. The one in the right lane, thank God, did stop. Because if he didn't, he would have pulled right in front of that one stop heading towards Dairy Queen and then been hit by the other vehicle that went around. The point being, there's no crosswalk. People don't know to look for somebody walking across that street. Furthermore, there is no crosswalk down by the credit union down there, TCI. Is that correct? There is a ramp there for handicap, but there's no crosswalk. Again, I have no idea why. It doesn't make sense to me, and I can't imagine paint would cost that much. So, the point is I'm here, and so you know a little history quickly, too. Last year, I went up to City Hall to talk with somebody up in the building permit section about this issue, and I was met with a very rude, argumentative female who subsequently proved the fact that she seemed to want to exercise her debate skills with me. And I didn't come there to do that. I came to offer the suggestion. Subsequent to that, I talked individually with city council members, those both present and perhaps future, the city manager, the city mayor, and a number of police officers, including the chief, about this issue. So it isn't as if I'm Johnny come lately and trying to get this something done about this. So So I would very much appreciate it if you as a council take the lead and see to it that something's done about what I think is a very serious issue, and not being melodramatic, but it could literally be a case of life and death, and I'm not volunteering for rigor mortis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, do we want to discuss it in Public Works, if there's any, see if there's even an option, something we could do? I don't know. We can't redesign the intersection.
What you may do as a council, you could ask Public Works to bring you a presentation at the next committee meeting. That might be the appropriate, informal at this point, but you could ask Public Works to put it on that agenda.
The committee item?
On the committee item, yeah.
I prefer the chair make. That's all right with the chair. I don't want to speak for the chair of the committee.
I'll just ask the Public Works Director to look. I don't know if you can do a time frame between now and the next committee meeting or the following one, but if you could bring something to address these concerns to the Public Works Committee meeting.
So, you're right, I can't see that date. That committee meeting will be, it'll be the next one. It'll be August.
It'll be August the 14th.
Okay, so August the 14th is
for the 19th.
August the 14th, and that one meets. That will meet at 8 a.m.
Yes.
Yeah.
So at City Hall.
Is it the morning part of it?
Yes.
Yes. Would you like to give me a wake up call?
I'll be there. I'll wake up.
Someone mark it down that they're going to do a wake up call for John at 7:30.
Come by mugshot. I'll get you a coffee.
Okay. So thank you, Committee Chairman, Councilperson Zimmerman.
I want to, John, thank you. This is the third time you have been back, and since the first time I've been at the intersection. It's good weather, kids on bicycles, and you're absolutely correct. That curved wall right there in front of Kinder Care, ironically. People coming, 25, 30 miles an hour, they're looking and they're not slowing down. They jerk that, and the people that are trying to cross that crosswalk, they're blind. You know, if you're coming west, you can see them coming, but coming down there and coming across going east, it's a death trap. It's going to be, someone's going to get caught there. It's going to be not pretty.
Yeah, but even coming west, they're looking at oncoming traffic, not at pedestrians.
Yeah.
The people who are turning on the Hobander, they're not looking at pedestrians.
Yeah.
Okay, so Committee of Public Works, all the council members
are
welcome to attend that committee at 8 a.m. on that Wednesday morning. Okay, anyone else for the open comment period? We've done good. So anyone else? We've got just about everybody here, so we'll get somebody else. No? Okay, we will move on. Council, I would entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask that an item be removed from the consent agenda for possible delay, and that's the resolution regarding Bender Park.
Okay, the resolution on Bender Park?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to move that from consent. Do we want to discuss that in the agenda?
No, it should go before the Parks Board first.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a delay until the Parks Board had an opportunity to take a look at the issue.
Okay, council does need a vote, kind of a nod, okay with you. Okay, so we'll move it to Parks Board, then committee, then back to council. Okay, that is off the consent agenda. Move to accept the rest
of the consent agenda.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, second by Councilperson Hansen, motion by Councilperson Mutchler. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion carries. Okay, next up is introduction of some new guy. Welcome, Yuri.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. We don't hire new staff people very often, and in this case, we had not hired a new building inspector since Ronald Reagan was president, so that's quite some time. Before I was born, actually.
Shut up.
Katie was graduating high school. But we have had the opportunity to hire a new building inspector recently, and we hired him a couple of months ago, and we've had some time to get to know him. And Kyle, could you actually come up? Kyle Huebner is our new inspector. I can look you in the eye the same as Kyle will look you in the eye, as really the face of the city for many of our citizens. And tell you that we really did make a good choice with him. Kyle looks at educating the people out there as much as regulating them. He wants to get them to a point of completing their project rather than keeping his thumb on them or quoting some kind of arcane code language. He's a student of the building codes, wants to, we asked him, what do you do in your spare time at work? And he said, I want to study, which was odd. He's not very popular at work yet, but at least he knows what he's doing. And we've heard a lot of good things from our developers, too, from our contractors in the development community, saying that we really did pick the right one. He works hard. He plays it straight. The code is his Bible. And I think that the city of Ferndale is very fortunate to have Kyle with us, and I hope that we have him for another 20, 25 years.
Now, before we go on, because it was appropriate timing, I had a developer call me this afternoon, and I already shared this with Kyle. And the developer said, you know, Gary, I have to call and give you an apology because I called and I was fairly rude when I knew what you were doing with your last building inspector. I liked your last building inspector, thought he was a great city employee, and didn't agree with the direction the city went. But he said, Kyle has turned me around. He does a great job. He's replaced your building inspector. You did a wise move, and I want to apologize to you and the rest of the council. I never did share his emails because it wasn't
pretty.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'll carry the weight.
Thank you.
But it was nice to have someone say, look, I was wrong, I overreacted, you went a good direction, do what you can to keep Kyle. So that doesn't mean a raise anytime
soon. They don't ask for a raise.
we're going to buy him. We got him a new truck, so that's okay.
There you go.
City administrator. It was from the wrecking yard, but it was redone.
I want to add, too, that I saw a different side of Kyle actually today. I was driving to work and my truck died.
Oh,
my
God.
So as I was sitting underneath the Slater overpass, wondering what to do, making a few phone calls, I see someone hiking through the tall grass between the freeway and Old 99. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe somebody's just, you know, itinerant walking around and going across the freeway as a trek across America. But as he got closer, I'm going, I recognize this guy. He had seen me pull over and was concerned and went down to the next exit, turned around and came back, picked me up, brought me to work. And so I want you to know that not only is he committed to the citizens of Ferndale and his job, but he's a good human.
He's a stinking Boy Scout, isn't he?
That's right.
He was great intelligence on his part.
And as the mayor said, don't look for an extra raise.
John, aren't you excited?
Yeah.
Would you like to say anything to the council?
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here and the kind words that you shared with me today, Gary, and helping you today. I'm just really glad to be here. This is a good fit for me, and I'm real glad to see you.
So this might be the, you know, first time that you've ever gotten a unanimous applause for building inspector, but you know, this is rare.
Thank you.
Thanks, Yuri.
Thank you.
Okay. Capital projects. We have things happening in Ferndale.
Sure do.
It is so nice to get emails. This has just been a great couple of days because people email and go, you're moving dirt and the streets are okay. And it's like, wow, this is a change. It was all right. Nice email. So welcome, Katie.
Oh, thank you.
Good timing.
Thank you. Good evening, Council. I'm here to give some project updates. We'll start with Thornton Road. So the last updates I gave were on June 17th, and since then, they closed the road on the 19th up on Thornton Road, and their first order of business was to grind the asphalt. So they've taken out the roadway, they've removed the sidewalks, some trees have come down. And then what they did is they started with the sanitary sewer there at the intersection of Vista and Thornton Road. And the sewer is pretty much all in. Everybody's connected up. They've got one section about 50 feet in length plus another manhole to finish. That should be done this week. They also did some waterline work up at the intersection of Vista and Thornton. There was kind of had a big water outage. The contractor worked pretty much from 7 o'clock in the morning till past midnight to get that work done. What that does is that interties our water system. That we've got a 14-inch main that runs down Thornton and a 10-inch main that runs up Vista, and that intertied those two systems. So we're glad to be able to have that work done. That added some valves so that in the future, if we have to shut that water line down, it won't affect so many people. So what's going on now is the contractor is digging out the roadway. We're tearing out the old subgrade, digging it down where it's especially soft, and we'll be replacing that with new gravel. Soon to follow will be the installation of the storm, and then we have also a rain garden to take care of some of the water runoff or treatment. And then late next week, we've got scheduled for curb to be installed. So then all that would be left would be the sidewalk, paving, landscaping, and striping. So we are still on track to meet substantial completion before the start of school this year. So that project's going pretty well, despite the fact that we had kind of a rainy couple of weeks there in the beginning. So if anybody has any questions.
Any questions on Thornton? That's good. Good news. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Vista, since the last update on the 17th of June, they actually started work on that day. They started off by doing a lot of saw cutting for the sanitary sewer, the water services between 3rd and 4th. They also, about the same time that they ground up Thornton Road, they planed or ground out the asphalt, the whole length of the project here from 2nd all the way up to the roundabout. They closed the road for the first section of this project. It's kind of being phased because of the utility work on the 24th. We started installing sanitary sewer from 3rd Avenue towards 4th, got across the box culvert and found our 24-inch storm, which kind of conflicted with our sewer. So this road's old. It's, you know, used to be known as the Blaine to Ferndale Highway.
Yeah.
So there's some always some wonderful surprises that you find when you start digging up old roads. So that was one. So when they discovered that 24-inch storm in conflict with the sewer, then basically we replaced the storm between 4th Avenue to the box culvert kind of in front of the apartment buildings there, just on the west side of Jensen's Floral. Some other work that they got done, we permitted an additional closure between 2nd and 3rd Avenue for 2 days before the 4th to allow the contractor time to do some water services and get those across the road, because it's more difficult to try to dig in the road and play Frogger with the cars while they're coming through. So it was easier just to get that closed. We also discovered that the storm system between 2nd and 3rd here was substandard. So we added some new storm in there to replace that, so some additional work. So this week, if you notice, the guys are out here installing curb and gutter between 2nd and 3rd. On the next section of road between 3rd and 4th, they're working on water services and doing taps for new hydrants. And later, probably early next week, they will pave the crossings back. It won't be a final lift of asphalt, but that'll happen early next week so that we can get the road open by the end of the week next week. So the next phase of this project includes moving up the road, going basically from 4th to Washington Street with the sanitary sewer replacement. We'll be replacing water services. We've got an old AC water main there that we're taking the water services are tied to. It's a substandard line, so we'll be tying into the other line there. We also have a pretty significant water revision at the Washington Street intersection, so we'll be replacing some older pipe that's prone to breaking and destroying new road. If it's left, we'll be doing that as well. So just because of some of the unexpected things and, you know, finding the storm sewer and then doing some storm replacement, we're about a week off of what we thought as far as the schedule goes. So just because we've taken some of the storm, we've realigned the sewer and made some adjustments, we're hoping to make that time up in the next phase. So I'll keep you posted as far as how that affects the overall schedule. So I think we're looking okay there. So,
Council, questions for Public Works? Councilperson Watson first, then Councilperson.
I'm just wondering how the budget looks so far. I know you've had to do some extra things. How are we doing budget-wise?
We're still looking at that. You know, I'm keeping a close look at that. There was some added cost because of the storm here between 2nd and 3rd.
Okay.
We have realigned the sewer on the next two sections of roadway, which then... We're trading work, basically, because where the sewer was before would have required us to replace the storm up in the vicinity of Washington Street.
Okay.
Because it's realigned, we're able to trade that work for the work that we did between 4th Avenue and the box culvert.
Okay.
So we need to work out some, every day's a new day with another change, so we need to work out those sorts of things with the contractor and see where we're at.
If it ends up costing more beyond, I mean, just so we get adequate warning so we're prepared for if you come to ask for extra money.
Yeah, I'll warn you early.
Okay. Yeah.
But you haven't hit anywhere close to projecting. You have a contingency on that budget.
They still have contingency.
We have contingency, and we add, you know, on a project like this, we have an item where we can deal with unexpected site conditions, so we do have that money available.
So if I don't want to lay off our new building inspector, that'd be sad. I'm just kidding.
Different funds, you're okay.
Oh, good. I didn't say anything.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Yeah. Katie, for years we've been watching the drainage, the storm drainage, which were actually creeks at one time. They kind of come down and they converge, and they kind of go someplace. One goes down in, behind the library, or not the library, the post office. Then a couple of years ago, you know, we had to dig up right the post office that went underneath are now our pizza
Main
annex.
Main Street. Mm-hmm.
And then there was one that Reichardt Navy did that went down 4th Street beside, between the Shell station and City Hall.
Oh,
so what I'm saying is, how is that being addressed? Because this it drains all the high school and all the mugshot areas and all the area.
That's called Shell Ditch,
okay.
And it's all part of the same system. So the box culvert out in front of the apartment buildings, in front of Redeem, New and Used, that actually used to be a bridge.
Right.
And so over time what they did is they culverted the upper part and they culverted the lower part. And so what's in the Vista roadway is actually the bridge section.
Mm-hmm.
It's all concrete. It's in good shape. We checked that out. And then what that does is that runs between the apartment building and the Landcastle building on the corner of 4th and Vista, enters into the city system. We replaced it as part of the Main Street project, and then, as you note, it got replaced when it collapsed. So, you know, as far as this project goes, we did take a look at the storm, and the storm is in decent enough condition that we can leave it for the time being. I want to say that most of that system has been replaced.
Yeah. I was talking with the salmon people that test the water, or basically look for a coliform, and they said that at some point in time, this was a couple of years ago, that there was some cross-contamination somewhere, and they were just besides themselves trying to figure out where it came from. But I knew all the different little things over the years that, like I say, they were bridges when Gary was hiding them when he was a kid. So hopefully that's all be addressed then. It's clean up the stormwater, because that's...
You know, I know Wendy's been taking mm-hmm. a good hard look at that area and the system there, so I think she's been doing work to, you know, just assess what we have there now, what our future needs are, and, you know, whether or not any repairs are required. So.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Katie? Okay, next.
Two small projects. The Guinevere Sewer, which is the alley between Main Street and Guinevere, between Hamlin and Sterling Avenue. We've got a pre-construction meeting for that tomorrow. And then don't have a firm start time. I'm sure that will be set sometime tomorrow during that meeting. So we can get going on that to replace that sanitary sewer that's undersized and kind of in bad shape. So.
You'll replace the just in the alley section, not going up in that Guinevere?
No. It goes from the alley at, goes from Main Street. There's a burp tank kind of there behind where the new fourplex is.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to the to Guinevere. So that will
just
be the replacement.
It'll be all in the alley.
A few hundred feet. And I think Jansel can
confirm. Yeah, the next section we got into our...
talk about that.
Okay, but no no road closure because it's basically an alley. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The alley will be closed, so that'll be a concern. We Luis and I went out there a couple weeks ago to start talking to the residents because most of the residents gain access to their houses off the alley. So
okay.
I've already been in contact with folks. So no, we're coming.
Katie? So does that project, will that drain into the main street, or does it go over to Vista?
It drains north to Washington Street, yeah, which then drains Vista. To Vista.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the last kind of small item was, you guys are all excited about the LEDs that we put in on Main Street, so there's a question, can we put them in at the intersection of Douglas? So that has been done. Councilmember Zimmerman kept reminding me that the lights weren't working there, so it actually worked out quite well. We had a burned-out photo cell, so the guys from SAIL that replaced the lights with the LEDs actually came out and fixed the photo cell at the same time. So if you can stay awake that long and check out the lights, they're really cool.
Someone asked me what percent power those lights save, and I just said, I'll ask.
I could guess, but it'd probably be wrong. It's significant.
Yeah, it's over 50%, I said.
I don't know. I could check. It was in one of the presentations.
Yeah.
I don't
remember. Significant.
That's all that I had.
Okay, we're going to roll to the city administrator now in his office. After he left, he now has deposited in his chair an extremely large set of plans and a signed permit for a new Ferndale library.
Yes, it looks like we're building an underground bunker right now. I realize that there's a lot of dirt being moved around. As you're aware, this project is in, at least the first phase, is a partnership with Mr. Bulios because we share an access road to what will be eventually his development and the rear side of the library. So that work's going along real well. And you can kind of see where the apron of the access road is, and you can almost envision where the new road's going to be. Otherwise, the excavation that you now see roughly approximates, but is bigger than, the footprint of the building. We knew from the geotest work that there was a lot of what they call unsuitable materials. It's either dirt that doesn't compact well and therefore shouldn't be under a building of such weight, or things like broken concrete and asphalt and bridges that were probably pushed over one day. So we knew we had kind of an amalgamation of stuff underneath there that we needed to get out. So that's what's happening now. They're literally digging out all of what is considered the unsuitable material, and then we'll be bringing back in, and you can see it now, they're starting to bring in dump trucks of good compactable soil. So that hole will be filled back up, and eventually on top of that will be a course of gravel that will actually be the base for the foundation. So that phase of the work is continuing. It's going well. The weather's been very good for what we've been needing to do. And we're out to bid for the library itself. Tomorrow we have what's the pre-bid, where interested contractors come and we talk about the project so they can ask questions of the architects as to one design feature or another design feature and what have you. So it's not mandatory, but it's sometimes very useful to not only gauge the interest out there, but to find out who's out there kind of sharpening their pencils. So that's tomorrow, and then we open the bids on August 6th, and we'll bring in them to the next committee meeting, which is the 14th, and then we'll bring it to the full council on the 19th for the award of the bid. As the mayor mentioned, we've got our building permit today, so we're all ready to go. There's some changes to the parking lot layout. We want to actually expand the parking lot, and that's going to be coming out as an addendum to the bid document. So when we open the bids, there's going to be some alternates in there, and I think many of you have been around on the council, you understand the concept of alternates. You can take them or you cannot take them. And sometimes they're mostly additive alternates. If you do this extra work, what would it be? Sometimes they go both ways. If you use, we had this for the temporary library, one type of window over a different another type of window to find out what the difference in the unit price would be. So there's going to be some addendums to this, nothing extraordinary. Janice has been working with our engineer on amending the contract documents and also working very hard to get the building permit out and get us out to bid. Even though we have some very skilled architects, the plan sat on the shelf for 2 years. It took a while to kind of wake everybody up and see if everything still talks to one another the way it should and if the library was pleased with the design. But I'm happy to say that everyone's just done a yeoman's job on getting this out to bid. And if all goes well, we'll be awarding the bid near the end of the month, and we should be occupied probably next July, maybe, depending. Oh, it's always weather dependent. But that's right now we have a 10-month construction schedule in the bid documents.
So go to Councilperson Ingram, Councilperson Goodrich, and then finishing up with Councilperson Watson, who probably has an announcement from the libraries you'd like to share. Mm-hmm. Councilperson Ingram.
Well, given the fact that we've probably moved someplace close to about 75 yards of dirt, when are we going to have a groundbreaking ceremony?
Well, actually...
Hold that process, and we will refer that later to Councilperson Watson.
Good.
Councilperson Goodrich.
Two questions, one for administrator and the other one for our finance director. One is, how much more digging down are they going to go, just out of curiosity, or are they done...
We use a firm, it's actually called Geotest is the name of the firm. They come in and they do all of our materials testing. They've been on site all along. They're testing a couple of things. One is for the material that's being removed from Mr. Bullius's site, they had to make a call as to whether it was usable or not usable as far as its compactability. So they've been testing that along the way. The other thing they do is, and you probably saw that they excavated out for the road first, mm-hmm. And then they came back in and they filled in with gravel. Well, again, Geotest was on there testing and telling them when they could stop and then what they should backfill it with and how they need to compact it and how many. It's quite an interesting process. So I believe that they are probably about as deep as they're going to go. But that's something that the geoengineers will need to...
I don't know if any of you drove by this weekend. They did, in the excavation of the footprint for the library, they did find some large chunks of old cement and asphalt and everything. So that's all gone. But it was interesting to me going, oh, that's what they found.
And the other question, finance director, when are we going to have to go out for our bond for the city share of the library?
Late October.
Okay.
Councilperson Watson.
The Friends of the Ferndale Library will be taking the lead for the ceremony. And because we've already broken ground, they want to do something a little bit different. And they're hoping something called Let the Building Begin. And we're going to try and get a time capsule put together, ask people to bring stuff for a time capsule, have a nice little breakfast, have some kind of ceremony to be determined. But again, we won't really have a groundbreaking since the ground's already broken. But we'll do something, some kind of party, with free food provided by the Friends and a time capsule to stick inside the foundation.
So you're looking for items to go in a time capsule to last for how many years?
Well, the building gets taken down, yeah. And we have a tentative date. Actually, the date we really want to do it is September 7th, Saturday,
well,
September 7th.
You probably want to talk to the police department and ask them when they expect to occupy that building. Age well.
Don't even go there.
Go
you're lucky. There's lucky none of the Friends are here except me. Mayor was mean again. Anyway, it's 10 o'clock Saturday, September 7th is the day we're shooting for.
Okay, moving on. Public hearing on the parking and turning movements ordinance. Planning director will speak. Welcome, sir.
Good evening again, Mr. Mayor and Council. We have two items that can be considered at once here in one ordinance. As you know, the Community Development Department has been working very closely with the Public Works Department and the Police Department to look at Chapter 10.08, which is the code chapter that deals with regulations within our city streets. Where you can do a U-turn, where you can park for 2 hours, where you can't park for 2 hours, so on and so forth. In this chapter, the Public Works Department is in charge of putting appropriate signage and other markings onto within the city right-of-way, and the police department is chiefly charged with enforcing those regulations. So it's important that what's put on there is enforceable. The chapter was last substantially updated in 1977, and as you might imagine, we look at things a little bit differently now than we did back then. One of the things that we found is we are looking at things a lot leaner than we used to, where we're approaching the proposed changes with the philosophy that most motorists aren't going to happen to have the municipal code open on their passenger seat as they're driving. And if they do, then our law officers would probably arrest them for it. Instead, we're relying on our motorists to rely on signage and other markings as they drive to give them a good idea of where they can or cannot park, where they can or cannot make U-turns, things like that. So rather than changing things really philosophically as far as where you can or can't do these things, we're wanting to make it so that the code allows the Public Works Director to make the appropriate markings and place the appropriate signing where she believes is necessary in order for our police department to adequately enforce. As part of that, none of that requires a public hearing. Well, the part that does require a public hearing is we refer to a definition within Chapter 18.76, which is our off-street parking requirement, dealing with abandoned vehicles, where we are wanting to change the definition of abandoned vehicles from 72 hours down to 24 hours. And I just want to explain that really quickly because the Planning Commission had this question as well. Right now, a vehicle could be sitting out on our public streets for 10 days before we are notified that there is an abandoned vehicle. Right now, after that vehicle has been sitting there for 10 days, once notified, the police department would come up, check it out, and they would tag it. After that, we need to wait 72 hours before any action can be taken, in which case that vehicle may have been sitting out there for 2 weeks. What we're proposing now is a faster turnaround where 24 hours after that tagging, the city could take action. Again, much if not all of this provides the ability for our police officers to respond to a site and to use their professional judgment as far as what needs to happen, but we feel that this gives them adequate resources in order to do their job effectively.
So questions for staff, and it is a public hearing, so we'll open up public hearing, but questions for staff on the technical nature at this point. Councilperson Ingram?
Gary, do we have any authority over the parking areas? There's a car up at Cascadia School. That's
can you move your mic just a little bit?
Get in front of you.
You need more better mics, for Christ's sake.
You can pay for them.
Don't tempt me.
Probably for a chair.
There's a car up in the parking lot at Cascadia School. It's been there for over 2 weeks. One time, and only one time, midweek last week, I saw a young man there tinkering with it, but it hasn't moved. And I don't know whether we've got any authority over the school, or whether we'd have to contact the school first.
It's in the school parking lot?
It's in the school parking lot. I see the chief shaking his head that we can't do that until the school requests it. So.
Okay.
I'll probably call the superintendent.
Call Mike Murphy.
Yeah.
One clarification. Councilmember Watson pointed out on page 55 of at least my packet.
54 of ours.
54 in yours. 10.08.070, subsection C. It should read, unless permitted by the city or otherwise permitted in this chapter.
Where are you, Yuri?
Page 54.
What section?
0.070, subsection C.
Oh, okay.
Unless permitted by the city or otherwise permitted in this chapter, it should read no property of any kind may be left on public property. Right now it reads basically you can put anything anywhere you want. We would rather say no. Yes.
Okay, any other questions of staff? Okay. Well, this is a public hearing. This public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. God bless you. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members signed up prior to the beginning of the meeting will be called first to speak at the public hearing. If you're unable to speak or sign up before the meeting, you'll get an opportunity to address the council once you've got through all speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his name, his or her name, address for the record, and be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals support the same position on the issue, we will encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire city group. So at 6:59:30, we'll open up the public hearing. The list appears to be people that wanted to speak just on the open comment period. Would anyone in the audience like to speak on this issue? Seeing none, I will close the hearing at 6:59:47 and go to City Council for action. I saw Councilperson Mutchler's hand up first.
Yeah, I appreciate the coordination department on this. Regardless of what we do, we're going to get phone calls from somebody, but nonetheless, I move the adoption of AB 137004 for approval.
Second. Okay, I have a second by Councilperson Ingram. Any further discussion?
Well, I had a question, but it's not on the motion, so I guess it's a move.
Okay.
Oh.
Right.
It's a question on the ordinance, but
that's pertained. Yeah, you can ask.
You can ask.
And a comment was made here tonight that sparked something that I don't remember reading in here. In a city that I used to live in, that you could go to City Hall and get an overnight parking permit that said gave you like a week, you know, if you had visitor parking or something, you could get a thing, stick it, tape it to your windshield, and that way it wouldn't be considered an abandoned car or, you know, or whatever parking. Have we ever given any consideration to something like that, to where something could be tagged, or
you want to refer that question to our police chief?
You want to talk to the mic?
Now, once again, I mean, small towns are adaptable. I know last week someone came to meet with the city administrator and said our car is broken down in the library parking lot. We have arrangements, but we think it's going to stay there for a couple days. In a small town, it works out great. Our police chief happened to be in the mayor's office and said, well, I'll just drive to the library and take care of this personally. So
if they have that problem, they should just... They call 911, is that what the chief said? I couldn't hear that.
I think if most people probably aren't going to know the ordinance, but I mean, we're adaptable. If someone would call and say, I have this problem, that's why my car is parked there, then, and still, even with the police tag it, then they would, if they would see that, they would have an ability to respond and explain if they had a logical answer of why their car was parked there. It's not a death sentence if people do not allow it to be.
Okay.
So anything else? No further discussion. We've been motion and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Next item F, Resolution Utility Capital Improvement Program. Public Works Director Janice Marlega. Welcome.
You have a PowerPoint presentation. If the computer's going to cooperate.
It is pointing at the clock. Do you want the notebook?
Why don't you turn on the power and see what happens?
Oh.
It goes out where it needs to be. Why is your tie so short?
You told me it looked good. It's a lovely color.
Is it going to work? Good evening, Council. Probably a couple of weeks ago, Council adopted our 6-year transportation improvement program, and we're following that with our utility capital improvement programs. So we'll have that information before Council tonight for recommended adoption. And I just want to kind of just highlight some of the projects, the utility projects that we've completed or have underway this year, and then also what the projects that we're looking at for 2014. So let's see if this is going to work for me. Probably not. There we go. Okay. So for water, for our 2013 capital projects,
We have the water softening, the pilot study underway, and this year we're planning on completing that pilot study, the project report, and also our PS&E, which we call the plans, the specifications, and estimate. So we pretty much, that's assuming that the pilot, we get good results from the pilot study, that DOH approves our project report, that we would move forward with the design, we'd have that ready to go for construction in 2014. And then as Katie gave you some information on our Thornton Road and Vista, where we've replaced water mains and done some upgrades there. And then also Mike is planning on painting Reservoir 2, which is our small tank right there on Thornton. And then also our high service pumps at our plant, we're looking at replacing two of the three, so we can help run the plant more efficiently and cut down on some of our electricity costs. Question?
Councilperson Ingram?
My microphone's way over there.
That's okay. Borrow keys.
Tank 2, Marlo, is that the one listed in Jordan?
Yes. Yeah, and then our bigger one is there at Bender Park.
If he could paint that kind of a neutral color, I'll bet you the Arts Commission would probably like to do a mural or something like that.
So like a beige color, light blue?
Like a green.
Let me know what color. Well, maybe we can provide you with some samples. Okay.
Yours good with colors.
I was trying to, like a swirly color or something.
Okay, we're going to consider colors. Councilperson Zimmerman?
Jess? Painting inside? Outside? What's the inside?
No, just on the outside.
What's the inside membrane?
Fiberglass.
What?
Usually fiberglass.
Inside the water tank?
Mm-hmm. Inside
the water tank.
Yes. Okay. So that there we would just clean.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's fiberglass. It's non-metal, though?
That I'd have to check on that.
Okay,
that'd be good. Okay. All right. And here's just a photo. For those of you that have not seen, here, this is the equipment that we have down at the plant for our pilot study on the nanofiltration system. And then here's another couple photos. And then on the right, that's our, like, the control panel, you know, the brains of the system that keep it running. Oh, okay, that first one went by pretty fast, but we have to invest in a new computer. This is on Thornton, and this is on the new valves that they installed. So the prior photos showed them prepping the valves, and then here's where they're actually installed. So they're pretty good-sized valves. And, okay, so those are projects that are currently underway, and then we're looking out ahead in 2014. Like, as I mentioned, the water softening installation work. Hopefully we'll be able to move forward on that. And then we also have some planning efforts that we need to get those started. So we're looking at, you know, putting together our long-term water supply plan. We have a plan. We just need to go back through and add more detail, collect additional information and add more detail. And then for water storage study, we need to look probably on the east side of the river. Look at need and where a good location would be. And a lot of that's going to depend on where growth occurs, when and how much. And then also another project that we've had on our water CIP for a number of years is to close the loop by installing water main at the end of Thornton, boring under I-5, and then tying in with our water system on the other side. So it's really important for us to complete that project in order to meet fire flow requirements. Okay, then moving on to sewer for 2013. You know, same thing, Thornton Road, Vista, we're replacing sewer mains. We have that street project. Let's take a look at our utilities and see what we need to replace or upgrade so we don't have to go back in later date and tear up our new street. Also have the alley project. And then on our telemetry, we finished phase one. So phase two, we have probably just 6 pump stations remaining. So we're going to go ahead and complete the design on that so we'd have the bid package ready for when construction money becomes available. And that we were really hoping to get the Public Works Trust Fund money to cover that. But it looks like we'll be waiting a little while for Public Works Trust Fund money. And then our mechanical screen, we completed that work this year. got that up and running. And then pump station 4 is our number one priority on our sewer pump stations. So same thing. We're hoping to get the Public Works Trust Fund loan. As soon as that funding became available, we wanted to move forward on construction. So we'll have our design work completed, have that ready to go when funding becomes available.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Yes, help me remember where pump station number 4 is.
Smith. Smith Road.
Way down in the low part?
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, here's just a photo of Vista on the construction work. We're getting ready to prep to install the sewer. And I got one more Vista. Yeah, street torn up. It's a little concrete road. And usually on those older streets, that's what we always, there's always concrete we have to deal with. What? Can you back up?
You should be able to press.
You should be able to go back. Telemetry. Okay, here's inside of the panel. The city, we had really old, outdated communication equipment. And the telemetry, that allows the pump stations to communicate with the wastewater treatment plant. If there's a problem, then a call will go out, and then one of our operators will get that call, then they can respond. And then they, depending on, they might be able to take care of it, or they may need to get in touch with someone from maintenance to go out there and take a look. So that's the way that we have it set up now. Old equipment, some of our pump stations, we didn't have alarms. So now we have alarms, and our equipment is updated so that if something was wrong with it, we can fix it. Whereas before, it was so old that we really weren't able to do very much with it at all. So we just have the 6 remaining pump stations, and then everything, all the pump stations will be updated. So it's a pretty big milestone. And then that shows the antenna on top of one of our pump stations. So the communication is via the radios, because using the radios is still a very cost-effective approach to take. So that worked for us on that. And then here's just a picture of the mechanical screen down at the plant. We were required to install this per a DOE requirement, and I think we were given 5 years to get this work done. So we kind of waited at the last minute, but we got in there, got the screen installed, and so we're in compliance with the DOE. And then for looking ahead, 2014, on our wastewater treatment plant, we'll start work on our facility plan because we're looking at a plant upgrade. We'll call it a plant upgrade in 2018-2019. So we're going to have 2 years to plan, 2 years to design, and then 2 years to construct. So starting in 2014, that's when we'll start planning. And then as we go through the planning process, gather additional information, then we'll have a better idea on are we talking about an upgrade or are we talking about a new plant. We're hoping we're talking about just an upgrade. And then we also have on our pump stations, we've been working on the design for pump station 4, but we also have 2 and 3. These are older pump stations built in the 60s or 70s, and some of them have not enough capacity. Some of the equipment's just old and outdated, and we're just limping along. And then I added the phase 2 for the telemetry. Hopefully we can get that finished. And then on storm for 2013, Wendy's been really busy, and we constructed the Southwest Stormwater Management Facility, or the pond. That was constructed for Main Street and Church, and then it has some capacity for private. And then on our Crestline, our stormwater improvement project, it's going in and replacing an undersized, probably damaged storm pipe. They've had a lot of flooding up in that neighborhood, and we've been working on that one there for probably 4 years. So we're hoping they'll get started on that work in probably a couple weeks, and we're hoping that it's going to make a big difference for that neighborhood. Got a couple, just 2 more pictures, I think. Okay, there's the big pond.
Councilperson Ingram?
Janice, when this was first being discussed and planned,
the pond?
The Southwest Regional Pond. We were going to have walking trails around it and stuff and blow up. Where does that access from?
There's actually 2 access points. One is off of Imhoff Road.
Okay, is that little gate there?
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Right, and then there's another access off of, actually, Douglas.
Off of Douglas, mm-hmm. Where the test pump was?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, just to the, probably to the west of that.
Perfect.
Yeah, so with the funding that we had available, there's kind of just like the gravel,
right.
The gravel path around it. Still kind of a nice walking path. Okay, there's the big pond.
Are we done with the landscaping and everything?
No. Wendy will, we had a separate contract for the, it's for the wetland mitigation. And so for the pond, the contractor will have to go back in there and maybe replace some plants and then finish up any remaining planting. But then we have to do wetland mitigation. And so Wendy will be overseeing that contract, and that will happen in the fall. And, all right, here's where, it's that person in the slide. That's the approximate location of where the storm pipe will be installed. So it's going to tie into a catch basin in the street and then go to the south.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Yeah. And this is what we're trying to take care of. This problem right here. Hmm. And this is just some of the ponding, but we have some regular waterfalls from there. So hopefully get in there, get this work done, and we've worked really hard to try to bring this one forward. Okay, and then for 2014, Wendy talked about this in one of the committees where we need to expand the Newbauer Pond. Newbauer Pond is one of our regional facilities. And so we actually have a bigger area, drainage area, that we need to serve. And so we need to expand the pond. And then also from a water quality standpoint, we need to cover the fueling station up at the public workshop. And then from a conveyance point, we're looking at replacing the Brown Road culvert. All right. Okay. So as far as our CIPs, we've gone over the storm, the sewer, and then I have just a couple comments on the water. The copy that was in your packet or online, I had to make a couple changes to the CIP based on discussions with Mark and with Mike on what work we could complete this year versus 2014. So what I've done is I've taken off for paint tank the reservoir two off of the 2014, because we're going to do that work this year. And then I also took off for the high service pumps. We're going to complete that work this year versus 2014. And then I decreased the water softening, to install the water softening equipment by $200,000, assuming that would be spent this year versus next year. So I made those adjustments to the water CIP. And so this is the final, I'm hoping that this is the one that council will adopt. But sewer stayed the same and storm stayed the same. And I know that Mark's going to follow up on some financial information, but I think that is on a follow-up agenda item.
Any other questions for Public Works before we go to Treasurer? Yes?
I'm just curious, how much were we expecting to get from the Public Works Trust Fund that we're not going to get now for 2014?
We had actually put in for like $8
million. $8
million. We just asked for everything. Okay. And then they had gone through and revised the list, the project list. And then I think that, you know, because they were trying to come up with maybe what they saw as a more reasonable list that could possibly get funded. So they kept cutting projects.
Okay.
And so, you know, they worked their way down to $5 million, $3 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we started out with $8 million.
Okay.
And then got to zero.
And it got to zero. Okay.
Yeah, which is very unfortunate.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, the only thing you can say is all that money for streets, sewers, and stormwater went into education. So.
We hope.
Debatable.
We'll see.
Well, no, that's how they
legislation
federal requirements. It's exactly where that money went. So.
We'll see.
Okay, you're going to turn it over to Mark then?
Or
can we vote on?
You want to vote on them?
What's that?
Vote on
the CIPs.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the resolution.
Okay. Councilor Hansen.
I move that we adopt the 2014 to 2019 capital improvement programs for water, sewer, and storm utilities.
I'll second.
Okay, and seconded by Councilor Goodrich. Excuse me. Are you?
I just got to get people. If everyone could consider speaking into the mics tonight, it's really. We've had complaints from the public about inability to hear.
Oh, on the recording?
Yeah. In general, live.
Okay, I'm going to repeat my motion. And then I move that we adopt the 2014 to 2019 capital improvement programs the CIP for water, sewer, and storm utilities.
Second.
And seconded by Councilperson Goodrich. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries, 7-0.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Sue, I thought you were going to have Mark talk about the capital facilities. Okay, next up, mid-year update, the six-year... Oh, and excuse me. You're confusing me. Interlocal agreement. Gregory, or Yori's going to talk about it?
I'll start, and Greg can provide color.
Because it was such a positive thing.
Which color?
We were really excited about.
Yes, yes.
Something light blue.
We were so well received.
So the members of the public, this body, Planning Commission, have all mentioned at one point or another when we've been talking about the potential Whatcom County Jail that they wanted to know what sort of fiscal impact it would have. The environmental impact statement that is currently underway is looking at the environmental, aesthetic, et cetera, impacts, but not the fiscal impacts. So the city administrator, mayor, and I went and visited with the county executive, and we were able to demonstrate that a fiscal study need not cost a lot, need not take a lot of time, has been done successfully elsewhere, and could, in fact, actually help to resolve some of the questions that the community has been asking. So the county executive has agreed to fund up to $10,000 of this study. We expect that up to $9,999 of this study. We fully expect that this study will be done for less than that. It would be directed by the city under the city's scope and would be done by mid-month next month. So we think that it's very positive, and it helps to, again, resolve. We hear a lot about the impacts that these projects will have, but there is no evidence without a study of what those impacts will be. So this at least will be able to get a third party who's never been involved in this project before to come in and answer some of those questions. I don't know if Greg's got it.
You know, the only thing I would add, especially given the comments tonight, the scope of this fiscal impact analysis is really going to answer predominantly two questions. One is, how does it fiscally affect the city from the standpoint of, on the plus side, we'll have the construction activity that generates a significant amount of sales tax. But perhaps, and we'll have to see how this is quantified, on an ongoing basis, jails buy a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff they pay sales tax on. And given the destination sales tax, we may indeed find out that the amount of sales taxes generated by this type of facility is not as significant. We don't know. So part of it is, on the positive side, what sort of contributions, fiscal contributions, might a jail make to the city in a real macro sense. On the other side, balance against that is, you know, there was going to be industrial land that would pay property tax. It's no longer going to pay property tax. How does that play off of it? Traffic's a little different. Does it really have an effect on traffic? But that's really the limit of the fiscal to the city. What revenues would the city have expected if the land use would have remained the underlying land use of manufacturing versus what effect it would have on the jail? And the second one is more of a global, the question being, what happens to property taxes around these type of facilities, property values? I mean, is this something that people value living in communities where these types of facilities are located? Is there really a difference in the assessed valuation difference near versus further away? And these are, again, type of questions and studies that this firm that we've engaged has answered before. So we're not plowing new land in this regard. And so I guess going back to what we'd heard about tonight, we're not going to be studying the global aspect of a jail when it comes to the effect it might have on the city, which is a little more esoteric, changing the character of the city. That's not something that I think you could reduce to a fiscal impact analysis. It's something that communities need to make their own decisions as to the need and the location for these jail facilities. But anyway, Yuri was correct. We asked the county exec. He was very good about listening to our concerns, because we felt that for this, what might be considered modest cost compared to the cost of the entire jail, the questions that are asked are questions that some constituents in the county, since this is a county facility, will be asking. And why not answer them now? People might not like the answer, and you all are at the end of that a lot of the times. It's a question of message and messenger here. We're trying to give a message, and whether they believe the messenger or not, I guess we'll have to see how that plays out.
Okay, Councilperson Ingram, and then Councilperson Watson.
Well, I'll play my broken record again. I would think, Yuri, that fiscal impact study would be a perfect place to put the pressure on the county to say, you need to give us back that 40-plus acres, maybe over on the east side of Pacific Highway, just south of Gary's place, and give us that to make us whole again. I mean, we're losing manufacturing potential, and that we really could use in this city. So I think part of that fiscal impact would be if we're going to give up this plot, we need a plot over here to take its place. I just have to keep pounding that table.
And we're going to approach that on a couple different ways, this one in the UGA as well.
Councilperson Watson, then Olson, and then Zuber.
Well, Greg talked about it just for a second. I guess there's no way to quantify what happens if we suddenly have bail bondsmen up and down Main Street. There's no way to quantify the effects that the jail might have on the character of the city. I mean, because we really don't know, I guess. Because you're looking at the property values right next to it, but I don't know how it might be what Main Street.
It's going to be purely anecdotal. I think it's fair to say that given the geographic distance between Slater and literally downtown here, I would be surprised, you know, not that I shall have any great insight on this, but I'd be surprised if it's bail bondsmen and what have you, you know, located downtown when in fact their clientele is down at Slater, and the chances are their family members are probably even further south than that. So
I'd like the planning director would like to tackle that answer.
As far as Main Street's concerned, you can probably extrapolate a little bit from their transportation analysis. They're estimating that about 75% of the total trips are going to be southbound back into Bellingham, and only 8% or 2 going all the way up to Main Street. So as the city administrator said, Main Street really isn't convenient for them, and I think that they are looking at convenience. And so the larger city is still going to, it will always have the most lawyers, the most bail bonds people, so on and so forth. But we'll see over time. I mean, I hesitate actually to say it will. We don't know. We don't know what the impacts are going
to be. But it would be interesting to have Burke. I mean, Burke is the company that we use, and you guys are familiar with them on their work. It would be interesting to just have them make a couple phone calls to bail bondsmen and say, what's your opinion? And that's a quick, easy one. Yeah. And I mean, that it's a free market system. That would be an interesting answer to hear. Call wherever the biggest or second, first and second biggest bail bonds would go. What's your theory?
I thought they're going to keep releasing in Bellingham, so they're not going to be releasing here.
Yeah, but it'd be interesting to have that information because it has been brought up.
It's been brought up before.
At the hearings that we've had for neighbors, they've asked that. And, you know, what this study is going to do is it's not a great answer when people ask questions about the other go, I don't know, when I think maybe you could get a reasonable answer from a private enterprise that might say, well, here's my opinion, we're never going to move out there. Okay. Oh, no, we're looking at land already. Who knows? So, interesting. I mean, it's a simple phone call. So, to add to that, I mean, we control that. We can have Burke make two phone calls. Doesn't sound like a big deal. Councilperson Olson.
I'd like to move for approval of AB 1307006.
I'll second. Second. Okay. Further discussion. I had some hands up, so I'll go with Councilperson Zimmerman.
Yeah, it seems like, as Greg pointed out, there's about, I don't know, 5 to 10 questions or pots of data as far as the tax base, the property tax, sales tax, some of the points that Paul brought up. But the idea that a lot of this information seems like it's the university economic group sense. I mean, they could do it, again, kind of your lean idea is, hey, why don't, if this is public information out there, how come, you know, we don't have some public entity who's neutral up at Western working for us?
Well, Burke is an independent entity, so
yeah, but not public.
Burke will do it.
Not public.
And they've done it before.
I think this study would have been much more than $10,000 had they not. They've got the model established, and they can tweak it to fit this one, but they know the basic parameters of the science behind it for these jails. I think that we have it up on our website, do we not?
Yep.
The previous study that they did in Washington, in King County, in 2010-2011. Very similar.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Is this going to take into any consideration looking at the Division Street Jail moving? Because that's kind of an industrial manufacturing area. When they moved the jail there, what effect did it have on Bellingham and the surrounding community there? And from what I've heard, it's been a positive. They had some positive things out of it. So
that's good. That's a local question that Burke can research. So that's a fairly simple one.
One thing I forgot to add, and this is something that came to light, the fire chief got a hold of us and said that realized that, you know, having a county jail at Slater from a police standpoint might actually be a little convenient just because it's a little closer. But the real impact is going to be to EMS. Right now, you know, that you get 600, 800, whatever it might be, inmates in there, and someone's going to have the sniffles from time to time. So they get quite a few calls. So one of the things we've asked Burke to do is, and this goes back to the existing jail facility, right now the city of Bellingham is presumably responding for those aid calls. So we're asking them to also try to quantify what sort of impact it might have on our fire district. As you're aware, we pay for that indirectly. So it'll be interesting to find out just what that means to the staffing, maybe not from a gross staffing, but an acceleration of staffing. They might need more EMTs, maybe a little quicker than they thought, because of the calls they make out to the correctional facility.
So again, for the record, before you vote, because there was confusion earlier, we are going to contract with Burke, and the county has agreed to pay up to but below $10,000, and Burke has assured us that ceiling will be made. So it's no City of Ferndale money used in this study. So I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion needed? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion carries 7-0.
Thank you.
Good job, Council. Okay, our Finance Director.
That's one package.
One each.
Oh. I was like, we're going to be here a while.
How many trees did we murder this week?
And here's the other. Here's part two. Yeah. One each.
Money is attending.
The Lord of the Rings?
Apparently. That's about the happy ending.
It's the accountant's version of the Lord of the Rings.
Fresh.
Well, I thought about actually
you do that well.
Not producing any paper and just putting it to sleep.
Georgia Pacific, by any chance?
This isn't bad. We should see. I thought we'd start tonight. This is a mid-year update required by our financial policies that you have approved. Not looking for any kind of resolution or ordinance vote tonight. This is informative. Always good to look ahead a little bit, 6 or 7 years. Try to predict where we're going to be. So you should each have a big sheet and a little sheet, mm-hmm. except for Yori. And I do have one extra copy for the audience here. And I'll be getting this to Sam to put on our website probably tomorrow. It's two files. First, we'll look at the large sheet since Janice went over the capital facilities plan for water, sewer, storm. The large sheet deals with water, sewer, storm. And I'm going to skip page one, the first page. We'll come back to that. Let's look at the second page, which is the water plan, the water six-year look ahead. That's the one with blue on the upper left. Later you'll see what the color is for sewer. Some assumptions and things we've done here. We have incorporated the capital improvement plan even for 2013 plus 2014 through 2019. We've laid all that capital need in there. And the assumption here is the only rate increases would be cost of living for water. My assumption is with the 2% inflation rate, we would go ahead through ordinance, go ahead and only use half of that for water. If it's a 2% cost limit, we'd use 1% increase in water. And kind of corollary is on the sewer, if the cost of living is 2%, we use 1.5 times, or we'd use 3% increase in sewer to try to get the sewer fund to be more self-sustaining and more able to meet its debt service. The other feature of this water sewer storm, the water page, I've loaded in here some of the assumptions we discussed in committee, that is adjusting water and sewer rates, though I dare say downward, and increasing utility tax from 6.5% to 9%. Blaine uses 9%. And what this does is the typical water bill, or any water bill, water, sewer, storm, utility tax, is virtually no change in the grand total. But it brings in $125,000 into the general fund next year. So you'll see that once we get into the general fund. The other thing we've done here, we've loaded in $100,000 per year of costs over and above what we have been experiencing in the past on our current water treatment plant. So another $100,000 a year for whatever non-labor items, kind of a measure of conservatism in terms of operating costs on the new water treatment plant systems, including the water softening. We have the fourth operator laid in here, probably starting late this year. We're delaying a little bit on that fourth operator. And so for water, rate increase would be cost of living, actually half the cost of living. Laying in all those capital projects, and the only thing I've delayed, the new Smith Road water tank for 2016 and 17, I've kind of phased that a couple of years later. The alternative is to actually go out and borrow the money and put that water tank in as scheduled. So that's the only real adjustment on water. You'll see that kind of in the middle of the page where there's some red numbers, which means delaying a reduction of expenses, pushing that water tank out a bit. But alternatively, like I said, depending on when we need it, we can borrow the money with a revenue bond. But the cash balance is reasonable. Coverage ratio of our debt service is reasonable. That's a Boeing term, turn rate. This comes back once in a while. Look at the sewer page, the next page. Again, we've laid in here all the capital needs for the comp plan and our estimate for this year, 2013. And again, the sewer page includes a one-time 1% decrease in sewer rates for 2014 and the feature of cost of living for 2014. June of 2014, assuming a 2% inflation rate, 1.5 times that, or 3% per year, whereas water was 1% per year for COLA, cost of living adjustment, sewer would be 3% per year. Again, to try to get sewer gradually into a better coverage ratio position. We do, laying in those capital projects in 2014 and 15, we need to borrow some money. Almost a little over $7 million revenue bonds. And that debt service is laid in about down middle part of that page. Also, in 2018, a $9 million revenue bond, basically for the sewer wastewater treatment plant, a little over $10 million. Now, that number might grow depending on the process that's ultimately decided. Now, in 2018, we would need a 5% rate increase plus the 3% cost of living to help us with the debt service on that large borrowing for the new expanded or new process sewer plant. But again, it works. There's hardly any little bit of phasing in 2019 with that red $500,000 number. Again, the cash balance is reasonable. The coverage ratio for debt, not as great as you'd like. Row 116 is kind of hard to read, in row 116, shows the coverage ratio for all debt. And, it, you know, it falls below 1, which is bad. That's only if we had no connections. Things went to hell. We had no new customers, which is unlikely. But no new customers, then sewer would have a tough time making its total debt service. But with connections, those numbers are above 1. Above 1 is good. Storm, we've laid in here the capital needs of storm as well. Want to point out that the monthly rates of $10 a month for residential is frozen. There's no assumption. There's only 2% growth in customers is the assumption. And maintains a reasonable cash balance. Row 88 is the cash balance figure. And the coverage ratios, very little debt in storm, so the coverage ratios are almost off the map. 21 times debt service. So that's really good. Going back to the very first page of this, a lot of numbers, but this combines water, sewer, storm. And if we go out to revenue debt to the bond market, we join water, sewer, storm in terms of coverage ratios, percent of cash reserves balance, and that sort of thing. So it still looks favorable. Where it says all bonds and loans with all revenues, that is connection revenues and rate revenues, looks favorable. Starts out at 2.05 for this year, 1.8 for 2014. And then the next row down is if we had some kind of moratorium or absolutely no new customers, we just relied on revenue, rate revenue, and fees. Again, we're a little bit skinny in 2015, but we're at least 1 in terms of covering our debt service costs. And reserve balance, about midway down, as compared to our goals, get a little tight there in 2015 through 17. Again, laying in all those capital needs each year without any delay except for the water tank, which alternatively could do revenue bonds. Yes?
No, I...
Oh.
When we have questions.
Okay.
That's kind of the end of my speech on water, sewer, storm.
So, Councilperson Olson?
On utility tax, are you proposing raising it, the entire utility tax?
Water, sewer, storm, utility tax, yes. The proposal would be for collections and...
The utility tax is also on phones. So
this is just our own utility, our water, sewer, storm, which we have no limit. We have no constraints except for your vote in terms of the percentage.
State imposes a limit on telephone.
So that again, can you lean forward? So,
okay. Well, I was just trying to explain to Keith, but the state imposes it. I believe it's a 6% limit on things like TV, cable, telephone, power.
Natural gas. Yes.
You can't go above 6%. It's only our own utilities, meaning water, sewer, and storm, that we can have a rate that's higher than 6%. Right now it's, what, 6.5?
It is 6.5.
So that one could not go up to 9?
Right. Apparently not.
Okay.
Yeah, electricity, natural gas could not go up to 9, but water, sewer, storm on our own utility could.
Okay.
That would, I mean, you're shifting, so you're putting more money into the general fund
right.
out of utility tax.
And we're able to do that, and we reviewed some of this in committee because we've had lower costs being transferred into water, sewer, storm, like central services costs, equipment, computer fund, and a better look at how much of our own management and clerical labor really is attributed to water, sewer, storm. So, we've shown reductions there that helps us with these rates.
As one person of 7, I would be completely against a large rate increase. Every time we do that, people scream like hell, myself included this time, because I'm on a fixed income.
On this case, and Mark, would you like to answer that? Because you've set it up to be revenue neutral. You just shifted that.
Sure.
So do you want to tackle that?
In our exercise, we'll review this more in committee again. Continue. When you look at a typical household uses 12 units of water every 2 months. Not you.
Sorry. He's very clean.
The water dollars would go down. The sewer dollars would go down. The storm would stay the same, and the utility tax would go up. Grand total on the bill doesn't change. Like 11 cents.
In all honesty, let's be honest. Mark is reacting to the different accounting practices of the auditor and has reacted to that in terms of them shifting money from one fund to the other.
Right.
He's reacting to that, and what he's done is legal.
Oh, I'm not suggesting he's done anything else. I
no, but I mean, let's be honest. I mean, let's be honest on why we would do that.
Yeah, it's a fun game at the show.
It's three-card Monty, is what it is.
There you go.
Okay, I will hold the rest of mine until we see it in a committee and discuss it.
This discussion will go on. This is not the last of this discussion by any means.
Thank you.
Councilperson Zimmerman and then Watson. Did I miss anybody? I think I got that right. Councilperson Zimmerman and then Watson.
Mark, looking on the all the green section here of the fourth operator, chief operator, it says $55,000. Now, where's the benefits? The cost of the benefits. Where is that figured in? We figure you use about 25%.
Yeah. Because we're adding cost, we probably have to ask about work structure, how we would benefit perhaps less overtime, less on-call time, which costs money.
I think you were asking for their additional costs. You were anticipating that's their salary. What's their additional cost?
Is that what the question is?
Exactly. Yes.
It's all inclusive. 55 grand, 50 grand is half the operator. We split it evenly, water, sewer. So
this is a lower wage.
100 grand, is assuming, including the health benefits, payroll taxes, and that sort of thing. And plus salary.
Okay, that answers my question. All other expenditures, including latecomers, now that's a big chunk of change, $361,000.
What row are you on? Where can I see?
Number 36 on page 2. It's right under the first, number 36, right under the green section there.
36.
Other things, latecomers fees, other expenditures.
It's all the operations. It's still under operations at the plant.
So that's you're taking the manpower and salary.
It says latecomers. That's a very rare thing, so you kind of ignore latecomers costs. But that's all the all the other costs that are not labor and they're not electricity, chemicals. Not PSC. Sure, it would be chemicals, water, phones, repair and maintenance on all that equipment. There's a myriad of costs there.
Boot allowances.
Trucks.
Yeah.
Boots. Truck replacement.
Okay. Council.
And the labor's in there as well. Labor and benefits for the operations.
For other.
Councilperson Watson.
I guess more question for Ms. Marlega. It came up during the end of committee meetings. We were talking about the Blaine Water Treatment Plant, that they actually resell their potable water. And I'm wondering, is that something to think about for the future? Because they're a new treatment plant. They keep the potable water and they sell it for irrigation purposes. Could we make any money doing that? Well, because we're going to be starting to plan for the new treatment plant.
Yeah, so you have to typically invest some capital costs up front in order to do that. And, you know, we don't have anything planned now, but it's, something that the city that we could look at, later in the future. I think probably our first approach would be on the irrigation ConocoField. Right now we're still buying water it's non-potable water from PUD, and it would be nice just to use city water for that.
Okay.
So we're trying to figure out a way out how we could do that.
Okay.
So you're asking it be added, in terms of her capital facilities plans, where she, as you saw the chart, where she's at a certain point, we're going to be planning for a new plant, you'd like that be considered?
I'd like to consider that to see if somewhere along the way we could save a little bit of money.
Right, yeah, so we can definitely look at that in the planning process.
Okay.
But short term, we're looking at irrigation water for ConocoFields.
Okay,
so
thank you.
Councilperson Zimmerman and Goodrich?
Are you referring to Blaine, how they do that? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, their treatment plant was right down the hill from Semiahmoo, so that's where they use their extra water there. Yeah. We would have to have a customer that in this case, ourselves.
But we have HUD parks. Right there.
But what we are looking into is if we have, if we're doing the micro filtration, nanofiltration of the water, you're going to have a lot of excess water because it's a pressure basis. So that's flux water, and which it could be still potable water. So there is going to be a lot that, if we go that direction, that we're going to have to figure out what are we going to do with that. So, good questions.
Councilperson Goodrich? Aren't we required to put a bunch of it back in the nooksack? And if we start pulling water out for...
No, surprisingly...
We didn't take it from the nooksack.
We get no credit for what we put. We actually put more back in the nooksack.
I know we put more back into it.
For sure now. For sure now we put way... You know, we used to drink from the nooksack. Now, I don't know what the percentage is. It's got to be close to... Well, it's well over 100%. It's supposed to be 200% in terms of what we take out. You know, because we're not taking anything out. Yeah, it's got to be impressive.
It should go back into our own.
But we don't get any credit for that.
No, but I'm saying if we pull, you know, instead of putting the water back in the river, we pull it off and sell it or irrigate the fields.
I think we do every month.
Penalized or anything for
doing it.
Yeah. It's certainly, I mean, it was a great question by Councilperson Watson, and staff understands that's not the first time they've heard it. And that will be in that future. You know, we'll have to weigh the costs in terms of that, but great move for the future. So any other questions for our finance director?
Water, sewer, storm, then we'll go to the general fund packet. We can go to the smaller packet, well, smaller with more pages packet. I can't hear Council Member Ingram's mumbling, but what was
this? If my snoring bothers you, just...
I'm not going to cover every page, okay?
Thank you.
The first page here on the smaller packet is our general fund, and this is typically the one that's kind of hard to balance, even though we had big layoffs in 2009. I'm showing page one and page two, still showing a projected deficit of $43,000. Now, that's not a big number, but for 2014, general fund, $43,000. And two things help us a lot. One is... Sam's great work with covering our fire insurance liability, auto, and inland marine insurance. We switched companies. Well, it's not really a company, but we hope to save $100,000, and that's basically loaded in here, about $90,000 savings. I did load in on the revenue side on page one, assuming you will go for this utility tax change and lowering of water sewer rates that evens out. Showed $125,000 coming in on page one for 2014 up near the top. The other is my best estimate on what 2014 is going to do based on 2013. And latest information for 2014 on liquor taxes, we were supposed to be restored $57,000 of liquor taxes in 2014. They've apparently cut that in half. And so I had to lay that in here. Again, the legislature, tough on cities. So, you know, that's not too bad of a projected deficit, $43,000. We'll keep working at it. But those are two big deals that really helped us there. In 2015, we actually lose that jail credits because time is up in 2015. That's $70,000 of jail credits. It goes away in 2015. So it kind of adds to our challenge. That's kind of general fund. And page three is looking at our cash balance for our general fund. When the auditors come in, they say your general fund equals actually not just your general fund, but your reserve funds and solid waste tax, which is simply another utility tax. We chose to have solid waste in a separate fund. But we added those all up. And, you know, we're pretty close for 2014 to 100% of our reserve goal. Then we maintain that, even though we're having slight deficits, our cash balance looks favorable. Moving on, page four, we're starting to rebuild our reserve funds in 2014, a little bit at a time, $100,000 from solid waste, and page five, the facilities capital, $75,000 from solid waste. Page six, the left one, police retiree fund, we have three retired left one officers. We're obligated to pay all medical and limited dental costs for life, as well as home health care, and all the way up to certified nursing facility. I can just tell you it's underfunded right now. I mean, it's no big secret. It's a problem throughout the state, each city. Now, we have three officers retired. So we're starting to, again, slowly build up the cash balance, but it's a pretty slow slog until 2018 where we put in $250,000 from solid waste. Yeah.
Is it okay if I mention the change to the medical plan for that?
Please do.
Just as a note, when we were reviewing medical plans, we were also able to switch these LEF officers to a newly offered plan from AWC Benefit Trust. Oh. It's actually a sizable savings. I think almost half the cost.
Yeah, looked really good. Yeah.
So we have two officers qualify for it. You have to be of a certain age. Obviously, it's related to Medicare. Once our third gets closer, he would also be switched as well. What's great about it, though, is that they receive the exact same coverage, period. And so they're very well taken care of, but it's a sizable savings to the city as well. It's not, however, the largest costs that are, I think, part of the issue that Mark has.
Sure. Yeah. The out-of-pocket costs are really small, reasonable lately, last few years. I think all are in fairly decent health, all three. It really gets costly when they start needing more care in the future.
We bought them some fast cars.
Page 7 is our
couple questions. Councilperson Zimmerman and then Councilperson Goodrich.
Yeah.
John, it's like me.
Councilperson Metzler.
Question?
Question?
Yeah, I'll go first. Okay. What were your assumptions on nonprofits?
Taking a peek.
Where would you put that if it was in here?
Yeah, it's in here. Zero.
I thought it was.
Well, you might as well tell them.
Just tell us.
It's in there. It's a short 10 or 12 grand, whatever we did.
What we did before. Okay.
Line 71, page 2.
Oh, there's 13 grand for 2013. Actually, I do show a zero for 2014. Sorry.
Yeah, we kind of
this line, I wrote 71.
Okay. So remember, a budget is ongoing.
And then I'll quickly go through. Solid waste tax, page 7. There's more questions?
Yeah.
All right.
Councilman Zimmerman and then Goodrich.
Do we have a couple? Do we have some more candidates for this retired?
No.
No, we do not. We're limited to three retired.
They're grandfathered in because they were on the LEF1 plan that was created in the 70s. Okay. And then the legislature realized that was a bad idea and cut it off. So only the folks who started working when that plan was there are eligible for it. We only have three at the city of Ferndale compared to 20 for the city of Bellingham and Walton County.
Okay. So that's, that program has ceased. Now we're just continuing on and being in good faith. And
yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
My calculation is that we should have $6 million in an interest-bearing account right now. We don't have anywhere near $6 million in an interest-bearing account. So I got to deal with this in the coming years.
Maybe.
Like Councilperson Goodrich? I was just going to bring up what I've learned recently with my dad's experience. You're looking at about a minimum of $2,500 a month for assisted living with no real services. Up to when my dad passed away, it was $6,000 a month he was paying in a nursing home.
Yep. My assumption is between $6,000 and $8,000 a month between ages 80 through 85, and then nothing after that.
Quick question.
Oh, Casper Swanson.
What's the reason? For the property taxes, you're showing a 3% increase.
Good point. I forgot to mention
that line.
Yes, it is.
I forgot to mention that.
So we would take our 1% plus what we have.
Yeah, 1% plus 2. And the reason I laid that in, and we're still showing a deficit, is, well, we got hit pretty hard on the fire district. You know, that went up 7%, $85,000 or something. You know, we just got to try to make that up, is my proposal to y'all. And then, you know, we're pretty much done, 1% increase thereafter. I mean, it's, so that's up for debate, obviously, whether you want, how much property tax you want to take. But it's pretty tough with these liquor tax going away, most of it. And next year, 2015, we lose that $70,000 jail credit.
No public works trust fund.
Will not impact this general fund at all.
No, but
it's most for projects and utilities, road projects.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
So, running through here, page 7, solid waste utility tax. We show the half a percentage increase in 2014 as authorized with ordinance to help us make the debt service on the library bonds. But that fund has got a very skinny cash balance at the bottom of the page there. It's now servicing a lot of debt, predicted. All right, then. Page 8, street fund is a, kind of a tough one to balance every year. You know, this is our road maintenance and street lights and traffic signs and all kinds of stuff, street sweeping, snow removal. We're just showing a real small cash balance, and we show the Vista project in 2013 here toward the bottom of the page. Most of that is from grants and supplemented by the TBD sales tax for 2013. Park mitigation, page 9. Again, as you heard before, we've got some debt service on some larger projects in the past that take up most of that planned revenue. So the cash balance is sitting right about 50 grand, not a lot of extra money there to use. Page 10 is traffic mitigation. This assumes no new large retail. This would be ongoing level of effort kind of business. And you'll see after 2013, if you look at 2014, I've got no expenditures laid in there. Road projects would be candidates for this money, and that's what it's for, capital projects. But we've made our debt service. We repaid our loan on Church Road pre-construction loan. That's been paid off this year. And so that fund balance just accumulates, showing no expenditures for 2014 and on. Criminal justice, page 11. Page 12, local criminal justice. Pretty much a level of effort that all supports the police department operations. Page 13 and 14 is real estate excise tax. Again, this is REIT 1 used for public facilities. So that's being used for debt service. That's the other half of the library debt service. The first half was solid waste tax. This is the other approximate half to meet that debt service on the $1,050,000. The voter property tax obviously is paid by tax, property tax payers. Everything. Page 14 again is REIT 2. This again is used for road projects, and we don't show a whole lot of demand after this year. Just finishing up in the street lights, finishes up 2015 street light loan, the fancy lights, Main Street. So again, this is a candidate for a road project expenditure. 2015 is a hotel motel. Don't show any detail there. Debt service funds, I'm going to kind of skip over those because they're kind of boring. It all balances up. So that's all I have tonight, for other than water, sewer, storm.
Olson?
Mark, going back to the street fund, I don't see a... do we have an entry for street maintenance?
It's in the recurring expenses. Again, this is page 8, down below under expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
Recurring expenditures. We're running about 850 grand a year. So road maintenance is in there. All the 7 categories are in there. Street lights, road maintenance, traffic signs, street sweeping, snow and ice, sidewalks, and administration.
Okay, so somewhere else is a document that shows us how much we actually have to fix potholes,
cracks,
all that kind of stuff.
And the monthly budget summary that we send out to y'all, that's actually on the website as well. If you look at the street section, all those 7 categories of cost, well, 8 with the capital, just the thing, all those categories of cost are budgeted and laid out there, balanced out by revenues, gasoline tax, and then the biggest source of revenue in the street fund is solid waste tax transfers. That carries the day.
I'm not sure I understand.
Say what?
I'm not sure I understand. The solid waste transfer does what?
provides most of the revenue to pay for all these street maintenance costs.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy. You can see on page 8.
Okay, maybe I'm not raising my question correctly.
Try again.
For at least the last two budget cycles, Mark, when you do your budget assumption sheet, there's a line on there that's specifically related to, is it the sidewalk program? Streets and sidewalk program, and that's been zero.
And
I believe that's what he's asking about.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah, and this shows zero as well forever. Just a little extra money. Now, one could take some of that traffic impact fees and read two. Those would be candidates for projects. New sidewalk projects, new street. Because 2014 and on, there's hardly any expenditures laid in there. So that would be a source.
Okay. Then I would like to request to the administration that we put something in there for Janice to fix streets this year, since we're so flush, we don't want to let people vote on it. We have to do something. This will be the third year of doing nothing.
Now, we do street maintenance. Are you speaking of new sidewalks and more street overlays?
Fixing problems.
Just repairs?
Yes.
Line items.
Unfortunately, correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, use traffic mitigation fees, nor can you use REIT 2 for repairs.
We only can for use new DVD. Capital.
I understand that.
Hey.
I don't really care where it comes from, but put it in there because
you
keep saying
transfer of, because we could use transportation benefit district funds here. If we had new projects, then we could use REIT for the new.
REIT for new.
Let's work on it. We hear what you're saying.
Okay.
We hear what you're saying.
Pretty much
okay,
DVD has been earmarked.
Mark, Councilman Goodrich?
Just as a future programming note, when you pass out these, I don't know if it would be possible or not, on the debt service, lines that say, debt service for X, that maybe in parentheses you could put the year that debt service ends.
Okay, that's a good suggestion.
Because sometimes we're looking, how many more years do we have to pay on that?
Yeah, it's a common question, isn't it?
Or another column, or whatever is easiest for you to.
Sure.
Because is it 14 that we pay off City Hall?
This is the last year, 2013. We pay off City Hall. I didn't include it in here.
Yay! We'll burn the mortgage.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Any others? I'm always open.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Okay, moving on the agenda. Mayor comments reports. A lot of you were copied an email from a citizen on Sterling. And it is, I want to discuss that because she was even more aggressive in person. And it's a common misconception that I deal with in my own business, is that everybody's convinced that their utilities end at their property line. And in water, that's true. We typically try to put a water or a connection right at someone's property line. But sewer, it's not that case. And I gave her examples of other cities that do a way better job on their website of explaining that because it seems to be a common question. And so we've talked about question and answers on our website. And if you look at those, if you Google, where does my sewer line end, a lot of cities go into maps and explain it clearly and try to speak in simple language because no matter what I did, and this lady, this customer does have a very unusual situation in the fact that probably her house had a septic tank at one time. Her clean out is at the rear of her house. Then it goes almost 80 feet to the edge of her property. Then her sewer line goes another 95 feet up to Guinevere, past Guinevere, or hooks into our sewer line. Our sewer line goes down Guinevere, doesn't go down Sterling, heads into the alley, the section that we're going to fix rapidly. And so her sewer line is a long way out.
Anti-gravity.
And no, it goes by gravity. But even when she was screaming, one of her neighbors, Dr. Binky, come and tried to explain. He's not making things. But to make a long story short, she was going to transfer all this to her attorney, who was going to sue us and everything in the world. Her attorney ended up being her sister. Her sister interviewed me, and she got an education. She was nice enough to check with her city that has the same regulations we have.
that, no, you own the sewer line. So in simple terms, if a customer ever asks you, is that the city provides a sewer line somewhere in the street, in the alley, some other street, and it's their obligation to get their sewer line to the city sewer. And you own that sewer line all the way, even though it might travel under a city street, past a city street, down a city street. And that was a concept that just, she is not uncommon where most people don't understand. And they're like, well, it's in the street, it's your problem now. No, it's your problem.
Or under a city tree like mine did at one place.
Yeah, and it's just, and she is not, you know, she is not beyond that where she was just like, look, my problem ends here and you're not helping me. And it's like, no, I'm not. Dr. Binky tried and then she was mad at Dr. Binky. Councilor Swanson.
So how would someone know? I mean, it sounds like it's not in our GIST system, so how would we, you wouldn't be able to put it on the web without having all these weird maps?
Well, that's, I'm asking staff to maybe look at, you know, Google it, and you can see how some other cities maybe explain it.
Yeah, it's very basic. On other web, I don't know what section of their website it is where they put it, but we did find when Googling this, because it's such a common sense thing, we were like, where is it in the law? We called the Municipal Research Services Center, and they said, it's common sense, you know, no one's ever argued this. But when you look at other municipalities' websites, the question is, you know, whose responsibility is it for the line that goes from my house to the main sewer line?
Well, my question was, how would you know?
And the answer every time is, well, yeah, it's yours.
But, I mean, I don't know where my sewer line goes. I mean,
that
would
be
impossible
for us to.
That's what I was, yeah. Okay.
See,
so you're
probably new enough to where your developer, we probably have development plans.
I thought you wanted him to put where people's sewer lines were on the web.
Like an app
you
have to
hope
that it's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or dig it up.
That's what I thought you wanted to do.
In this neighborhood, we have no maps. Obviously, whoever did, you know, her sewer line at one time switched from septic to sewer, didn't fill in the maps. I mean, it's just, back then we didn't do things. I tell customers, boy, I'm going to give you a map. Here's when we just did your new sewer line. The city doesn't have this. You should probably put this in a nice place. Yeah, fine. Okay, well, I've spent a lot of time on this map.
Is it beyond the scope of a normal home inspection to have
that it's checked? Just what's underground isn't seen.
Right.
You know, and then it's expensive. I mean, she was very frustrated. She said, well, how am I going to know? I says, you're going to have to hire a plumber who does a sewer camera. The sewer camera sets on an electronic signal. And basically, someone goes in from your clean out and traces that along, says, okay, it's turning here, this is how deep it is, and that's an expense. And she says, well, gosh, I shouldn't have to spend anything, and here's my bill for $175 because my basement flooded. Like, well, I hate to tell you this, I'm going to give you an honest answer. We're not going to pay that one either.
She didn't flood, she just had it. It was for the cleaning up line.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
That's
one more thing to worry about.
Would that be... Could that be found out with the underground
rotators? Well, no. If maybe she has a cement clay or cement pipe, that doesn't put on any put out an electronic signal.
I know we ran the line, the electric line, or metal metallic line on top of the plastic.
Yeah, but that's the older home in Sterling. That's a rare case. So anyway, I wanted to. I appreciate the city council. That you guys get a mass email. I really want to compliment all of you because all of you didn't jump into this, which wouldn't have helped the situation.
No. It was an electronic.
We tried to cut it down to Janice, to Greg and myself, and I'm not so sure we were successful, but we certainly tried to be polite. I eventually drove away as she was yelling at me. So that's for my council reports. There's an event this weekend, but I'll turn that to Councilperson Hansen for council reports. Councilperson Zimmerman?
Well, I was going to ask you about how's the whole Lummi negotiation thing going on as time passes?
We're still trying to get together. The last meeting was we told them, and they said we will get back to you with another proposal from them. So we're waiting for them to come up with something.
So are you still saying you're like 75-80% there? You're in agreement on 75%?
Percentages are interesting. they're not always what you think they are.
Yeah, I don't go in.
I don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that. Those words came from your list.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I mean,
so what we've been thinking all along suddenly changed, and odd that all three of us didn't understand that. Okay, council reason. Councilperson Olson.
I don't normally do this, but over Thursday night, we had, in my neighborhood, we had one of the neighbors come up and give me a plate of someone who was hiding in his car while the kids were playing baseball. He would hunker down. So I instructed him to call the police department. He'd written down their license plate and what have you. I went out to Bellingham, came back, and there's this car back again. As I drove by it, he hunkers down again. And I had towed a trailer, so I dropped the trailer off, went back and parked right behind it, and wrote down the license plate, and was talking to 911, saying, "You've already been called on this. This guy's back. I'd still like to know what the hell he's doing here." When the window comes down, and he sticks a badge out it. And what being, I'm kind of used to that sort of thing. That's not exactly what you do when you're hiding doing something. So I called the cops again, and she said she'd send somebody. And then I spoke about 20 minutes later with Sergeant Davis. And he informed me that it was a legitimate operation by, I'll say, a less than stellar federal organization whose name rhymes with something you want to put in your cold drink to make it cold. And that it was legitimate and that they would be there to a certain point and then would be gone. And that the citizens of this city had reported no less than 4 different times about these people. And you just don't see that in Bellingham. I mean, our citizens are very cognizant of what's going on in their neighborhood, and they don't hesitate to call the police, who responded. And obviously Sergeant Davis had put everybody's mind at ease and told them what he could without blowing their stake out, I guess. Congratulations to him. He did a great job, and please pass it on. I did that night.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Council reports. Councilperson Hanson.
Gary and I and Councilmember Messler would like to invite you to the Old Settlers Auction, which is Saturday night, the 20th. Starts at 5:30. The project will be to put a if you've not seen the lean-to on the barn, that's what last year's auction paid for. An additional lean-to will be added to the barn on the north side, and that's the auction is designated to pay for this year. And as we continue to do the auction, there will be cabins. There are cabins out there that still are to be available to be moved, but it's expensive. It runs $20,000 sometimes.
And the bargain cost for this event is?
It's $25. It's heavy hors d'oeuvres instead of a meal.
All you can eat.
All you can eat, and they always have food left over. So, and some really nice items.
How much are you trying to raise?
How much is that? Yeah,
$20,000.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to renting out those facilities. Thank you.
That's that in the record every time. That in?
Yeah. Tickets available.
All of it.
Okay. Tickets available.
That's left in the record. Yeah. We'll see.
To be continued. Councilperson Ingram.
Well, I would invite anybody that wants to come down and bring their screw gun and their knee pads to come down and join me in Pioneer Park, because I'm replacing the entire front porch on the Jenny house, and I'm too old for this crap.
Okay, any other council reports?
There's a lot of enthusiasm.
Seeing none, going to staff reports. Finance director?
Nothing. Further.
City manager?
Nothing.
Planning?
Nothing.
Oh, good job. Clerk?
Nothing.
Public Works?
Nothing.
Police? Okay, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved in second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay.